by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on coveting for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Preparations are concealed, not public. Stakes are buried, not headlined. The centers are silent, not praised.
Millions of people just living out their lives, oblivious. Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake! I drink it up!
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Cool.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, sitting in a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Welcome to today's program. Cold Reality Radio here on the UCY.TV Broadcasting Network. It is Sunday, March 20th, 10:02 a.m. on the East Coast of fictional Nightmarica. And again, thankfully, we have Clint Richardson, who's going to be live this morning. We're going to be talking about The Matrix, Simulacra, and Simulation. And we're going to discuss the inner workings of this simulation, this hyper-reality, and its effect on us as beings in this fictional creation of the elite and all of their machinations, their money system, their political system, their government, which Clint has pointed out many times and many others as well, that government is mind control or control of the mind. And they certainly have done a really good job with that. So I'm going to go ahead and connect with Clint here. And we are going to get started with the program. Again, Cold Reality Radio, UCY.TV. Clint, we have you.
Greetings.
Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Sure thing.
Okay. So, we were Clint and I were speaking the other day, and I invited him to come back to the program. He's been with me quite a bit recently, and there's so many things happening. There's so many new things that are basically just old things in the blueprint, in the agenda of this world, whatever this is. This we're not even sure with all the deception what we live on, how we function in everyday society. I'm going to read something that I just grabbed from, hopefully I can find this thing. It was a, might have been one of the last ones that I got here. I might not have it. When we look in the mirror, what do we see? Do you see the real you or what you have been conditioned to believe is you? The two are so different. One is an infinite consciousness capable of being and creating whatever it chooses, and unfortunately the other is an illusion imprisoned by its own perceived and programmed limitations. And, you know, that was a David Icke quote from one of his books. And whatever people believe about David Icke, or, you know, whether they're pro his message or they think that he's, you know, is a reptile from the planet Zumba, he really does make a lot of correlations to this fictional fake reality that we've all been exposed to. So in our conversation the other night, one of the most powerful things about Clint's development is his, you know, the connection to the movies and the things that we see out there. The Matrix was one of these things that he brought up, and he brought up the simulacra and simulation, which I was not even aware of. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Clint's going to enlighten us on that particular, it was a book written by a man by Viard, was it?
Ocelot.
Okay.
French reference.
Okay. We getting feedback or no?
Talking to me?
I thought we were getting a little bit of feedback there, but the author, he was a French author?
Yeah, Gerard was, unfortunately, he's dead. The titles of his books, if you can find Simulacrum and Simulation, the other titles of the books are just as intriguing as this one. He was a professor in a French university, ran with, I think, such people as Philip K. Dick and those types of brilliant, you know, authors. And so, yeah, he basically what it boils down to, I like to, Charlie, as you kind of know, I like to destroy people's heroes. Right? I like to defeat all superheroes and all villains, but I especially like to get rid of people's hope. I want to destroy all hope, because once hope is destroyed, then maybe some people will actually act. When you know there's no superhero coming to save you, that the only person, I should say the only man that's going to save you is yourself, well, then all of a sudden maybe things will change.
Mm-hmm.
Until we stop looking at things like, you know, the Matrix as something more than it actually is, which is just a really cheap plagiarization of a few very, very wonderful, wonderful books. Then you're not going to ever, you know, you're going to look at these guys, oh, they made this incredible movie. Well, yeah, not so incredible, it turns out. It's just a science fiction movie, B-rate, really, when you look at the acting, some of the acting.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out it's just a cheap plagiarization, nothing that special. But what it's based on, these books that we'll talk about, are absolutely incredibly life-changing experiences. And The Matrix, you could say, is one of those emotionally driven, you know, types of movies, superhero movies. But when you actually read the books that are behind it, and you see that everything is taken from these books, and it's a warning against it. It's not a presentation by a couple of what are now women, apparently.
Right.
You know, who took apparently the pink pill instead of the blue or the red pill. You know, it's not an alternative lifestyle concept in the book like it is in the movie. It's just so opposite of what the movie portrays or tries to present, this alternative lifestyle thing. And it's unfortunate that that's the way that Hollywood works. I should know. I was there long enough. And I like to talk about this very much so, because you don't realize, I mean, most people don't even know what the word Matrix even means. You know, for instance, you know, what is the Matrix? Well, no, what is the word, the Matrix? That's the most important question.
So you sent me a clip of Keanu Reeves and I'm going to play it. It's very short, but it was, as you said, it was required reading, and I found out later on that night. So here is Keanu Reeves saying what he had to read prior to reading the script for the movie, and here he is. One of the greatest actors of all time, by the way.
Mayor and Andrew said, okay, we'd like you to play Thomas Anderson, Neo. I had to read Baudrillard. I had to read Out of Control, which was about system evolution and robots. And then there was another book, which was Evolutionary Psychology. Those were three books that they wanted me to read before I even opened up the script.
So there he is saying what he had to read, and one of them was the Simulacra and Simulation, Out of Control, and the third one that's slipping my mind because of all the amazing video.
His reference was to Baudrillard, and that's his first name is escaping me. I apologize, but Simulacra and Simulation is the book he's referring to, and we know that because. Well, there's actually quite a bit of chatter about it online now,
mm-hmm.
but we know that because I also sent you another video which shows, you know, basically there's a scene in the movie where the guy comes to his door, he gives him some money in expectation of some hacked material on a computer disk,
mm-hmm.
which is really, you know, it's an ironic scene. He goes and he opens up a hollowed out book. A lot of people might not have noticed this before. He opens up a hollowed book, and the name of the book is Simulacrum and Simulation.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, you know, he puts the money in, gets the disc out, which is a representation of what? Well, those things are simulations. You know, what is this, the concept of a simulation? Right? So we already fall for the notion of a simulated reality when we're talking about movies, or excuse me, when we're talking about money, and then we're also talking about information on a computer disk, right? That now information is so important to the culture and to the economy that our entire structure seems to be based on it now, that if an information crash happened, it would be somehow worse than if the food crashed, right? Or if the oil crashed. It's like this information, this simulated reality, has become literally this sort of artificial world that we participate in. And that's a little concerning to me when you start reading this book, and it's a very difficult book to read, written by a very, very well-read and he understands the language very, very well and uses some very, very difficult words, especially in the translation.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you, it's one of the most enlightening experiences I've ever had reading this book, and it just completely obliterates what you think the movie is, whatever the intention of the directors there, the Wachowski brothers of the movie, completely different than the intention of the author of the books.
Right. So what do you think has happened in these years? I mean, you see so many, people, these interesting people who've written these books that have so much, they're just well-spoken, they're good writers, and it's so very hard to understand their writing. Is obviously we've been dumbed down a great proportion. Were these people just exceptional, or is what was their purpose for doing this? And when was this book written?
Well, a lot of the theme of the now, Out of Control is the second book, and that's by the author. I can't think of his name right now, but he's the author of, or the founder, I think, of Wired magazine. He's very much into all that stuff, and that book is about systems, as Mr. Reeves said there.
Mm-hmm.
And a system, a good example, and what's on the cover of the book is a beehive. A beehive is like a perfect system.
Mm-hmm.
You think about a beehive and all that transpires within, You can think of, for instance, Utah, where I live, is actually called the Beehive State. And I think the connotations there are pretty obvious, considering the religious culture here. So basically, to give you an idea of what this word simulacrum, for instance, you know, we can go back very deep into history and see that word being used. So it's not as if it's a like a new type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I gotta, you have to forgive me. I'm gonna pull up some things.
No, go ahead. It was Kevin Kelly was the author of Out of Control.
I believe so. Yeah.
The New Biology of Machines, Social Systems, and the Economic World.
Yeah, and it's pretty freaky. I mean, some of the stuff you read, and it's not pleasant stuff to read that and consider that that's what they want to do with us, right? So this is all about human capital management. Never forget that that's what the movie is representing. It's basically a way to extract our energy or our time. And if you think of money, money represents time or labor, right? Or future labor. So, a quote from Ecclesiastes. So we're talking, you know, pre-Christian era here. The simulacrum is never that which conceals the truth. It is the truth which conceals that there is none. The simulacrum is true. Right? Now you could spend hours trying to figure out that quote, and you never will. Unless you know the meaning of the words, right? So let's tackle these words. Simulacra or simulacrum. The same words. You can find these in the dictionary, you know? Simulacrum, we kind of know what a simulation is, what a computer simulation is, or what our society simulation is, what church simulates as Christianity, but we know that that's not even close to Christianity. We know what American society is versus Japanese society. These are simulations. And the important thing about a simulation in law is that what is similar is not the same. Right? You're going to find that throughout the law books, and that's a very important maxim of law. What is similar is not the same. So your person is not you. In other words, self can be made into this sort of separate artificial thing, and it's the same. It's your name, you know, you think it's your name, you think it's your number, you think it's your this, but it's a simulation of you. That's your person, that's your status that we keep talking about. Now, a simulacra, well, what's the difference between a simulacra and a simulation? Well, a simulation simulates something in the real. All right?
All right.
But a simulacrum is a copy with no original.
Right, and that was the thing that just kept ringing in my head as I was looking through some of this information this morning. I was up pretty early, so I was like, let me take a closer look at this. And that was the thing that just kept ringing in my head as they were speaking, a copy that has no original. And when you said that the other night, I was like...
Yeah, you rack your brain about what can that apply to. It turns out it can apply to a lot of things, actually. The Bible, it can apply to the English Bible. Because it's a copy that is so far, you know, it's translated out of the spectrum of being able to be comprehended. So it's actually a new version, if you will. Unless you go back and retranslate it back into the original. You could call the Bible a simulacrum, a copy with no original. You could. I don't think it would be quite accurate. So again, the simulacrum is never that which conceals the truth. So the copy without an original is never that which conceals the truth. It is the truth which conceals that there is none. Right? So the truth...
the truth that reveals that there is no truth, that there is no original.
Yes.
I knew you were going to say that.
The simulacrum is true. So the copy without the original is true. So, you know, you start thinking about that and you say, well, the copy without the original then is the original, technically, even though it's a blatant copy of something else. Just like the movie, The Matrix, is a blatant copy of something it didn't really give very much credit to, right? I'll give you another example of a perfect example of a simulacrum, speaking of science fiction, because science fiction, you know, if you go back to these old writings of Philip K. Dick and Pierce Anthony and all the authors I used to love, you know,
they wrote
some incredible, you know, the guy with wrote the Three Robot Rules, I can't remember his name, Isaac Asimov. They wrote some incredible science fiction. Okay, that's all it was science fiction, and it was not anything that was necessarily, well, compare it to today, right? Compare past science fiction to present science fiction that's coming out today. Well, today's science fiction is an original waiting for a future copy. So the simulacrum that they used to write was a copy without an original. All these science fiction authors were building upon each other's concepts. You know, let's write about a robot. Oh, what's a robot? Oh, it's a piece of tin with a, you know, that you see in these wacky little TV shows. Oh no, it's much more sophisticated. Oh no, it's more human than human. No more, you know. And then it got to a point now. So you had the simulacrum aspect of it. Now today's science fiction is an original, waiting to be copied in the future. So you've got, in other words, what they're writing today is to predictively program people into what is already planned. All right, so it's no longer it's no longer something that that's original. In other words, it's something that, okay, this is going to happen, so we're going to make a science fiction story. Whereas before, it was just like, oh, well, this would be cool, right?
It's no longer a fiction or what we think to be fiction. It's the predictive programming that is taking us. You know, the Terminator movies. Of course, the Matrix. Yeah.
Well, let's talk. Just, you know, I came across this website and it had all these definitions on the current sort of sphere of digital information, the massive online worlds that have been created. You know, the multiplayer games, but not just games. We're talking now about places where you can buy property. And I representation. I don't know if I'd call it a simulation or a simulacra, but it's an exact representation of the real. So when I say real, I mean actual real estate, which is actually, you know, a paper title that's on the land. So it actually represents, in fiction, it represents some piece of land on Earth, right, that you can lay claim to. So what is a digital property? What is digital worth? What is virtual property? What is online property? And it turns out, you know, there's all these terms that exactly copy what it is we do out here already in a simulated reality. So now you have this sort of simulacrum, because, I mean, if I sell you digital space, digital land, if you will, digital property, I'm selling you nothing, but you believe that it's something. I'm selling you literally a copy of something that has no origin, original origin, right? It has no, I mean, it's not a creation, it's nothing, right?
Right.
And so I'm looking at these terms, I'm like, well, look at there, digital property, valuable virtual or digital assets in cyberspace. What's property in the real world? Valuable assets in the legal realm, right? It's the same thing,
right.
but we've now got a virtual reality or a visual aspect of that land that we can actually see and even interact with in the computer realm. And so somehow, now, everything kind of makes sense to people. What is property ownership? Well, I don't have a property out here in the real world, but I have all this property and all these possessions and all these trinkets that I've purchased with fake money and fake this and thing. I've traded, I've bartered. It seems like people actually understand the whole mystery of the legal system when it comes to the actual virtual landscape. And that's kind of bizarre to me because I'm looking at these terms. They have a virtual court, which is a virtual institution in cyberspace with authority to adjudicate the cyber disputes and claims. There's people actually laying claim to the same piece of property that doesn't exist.
Wow.
But they're doing that out here too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Digital ownership, proprietary rights over virtual assets. These are the same things that are happening out in the real world. Web ownership, an expression that means the rights of ownership and power for transference of one's web assets along to the individual. You have online death, online legacy. You have web death. You have a web afterlife. Potential of web system and mechanism for eternal life exists within cyberspace. The web death, the choice of the web suicide or deletion of interactions for one's own amounts to web death and regard to one's internet life, that is no different than your legal life and your legal death. It's a fiction. And I'm looking at this, I'm going, wow. People can understand this because they have this sort of virtual world to look at, and you can see what an online death is the end of a user's internet activity after his or her physical death. Well, that's it. That's what a civil death is. A civil death is the end. When a man dies in real life after his physical death, well, then his person dies with him. The puppet can't exist without the puppet master.
Right.
These are the same damn things. And I'm just looking at this. I'm going, holy crap. They have police, they have executors, which are people like people who dispose of your assets to your children or whatever. I mean, cyber inheritance, same thing I'm writing about in my book about who's an heir and who's not, digital inheritance, electronic virtual assets belonging to an individual that are transferred upon his or her death to a designed heir. It's a cyber object, a virtual component in cyberspace, which may be in any form and may execute any function solely or partially. So what are we talking about here, Shali? Are we talking about a simulation or are we talking about a simulacra? I mean, we're in this realm now that we are accepting the Matrix. We are accepting literally and paying money for and going into debt for objects that don't exist in any form of reality. So what is that? You tell me.
Not knowing what reality is and not being able to decipher or decrypt information, you know, a zombie. A trait of a zombie.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think it's frightening. I look at this stuff and I'm going, my God, people are so lost that they actually are putting a value. And, you know, let's take an example from the book. Now, Simulacra and Simulation, he opens up on the first page of the book, and I'm paraphrasing out of memory here, and he talks about a map. A map is a perfect example of a simulacrum,
mm-hmm.
simulation as well. Where the map is all pristine, it hangs in it like a tapestry in the king's halls, right? And as the empire expands, the map expands, and it's beautifully drawn, and it looks wonderful, and it has all these names of places and everything. But how does the map compare to the real? Well, the map is beautiful. The map is ordained, and it's embroidered, and it's got all these things. Meanwhile, the land itself is turning to shit. Right.
Yeah, but the map.
Yeah,
is pristine.
But the king in his chamber, afraid to go out amongst the very lands that he has for fear of assassination or whatever reason, you know, all he sees is the map. That's his kingdom, right? What's the president's kingdom? What's the Queen of England's kingdom? What is these people's realm? And you find it's the same as this virtual realm we're just talking about. What is their land? What is their holdings? What is their titles? It's to paper. It's to fiction. It's legal. It means nothing at all without our respect for it. Without our
the consent.
Right. I mean, it's the same thing. So, I mean, eventually you're going to have, I mean, you already do. You have kings of certain virtual worlds and you battle for, I mean, it's crazy what we're seeing. And I understand, you know, a lot of people, it's, oh, well, that's just entertainment. Well, yeah, entertainment, to enter and retain the mind.
Right.
Mentis. That's the purpose. That's what entertainment is, you fools.
Like over the summer, I was having a conversation with Stephen, and actually, it was probably the first conversation that we had because I reached out on Twitter to him because he had a lot of really really interesting tweets, and then we started following each other. And I did a pre-recording for the program, and we were talking, and then this just kind of popped into my head, entrainment through entertainment. Entrainment through entertainment. And there you go. Yeah. It has a profound effect. You know, this. I mean, what is happening? We're sitting there, we're laughing, we're doing all these other things. We're saddened by a movie, we're intrigued, or, you know, The Matrix was definitely visually stunning in many different ways, but what is it? What is it doing? It's training us for the future. It's training us for our future enslavement.
Yeah, and it's so much deeper than just that. I mean, it's absolutely true, 100%. Matrix. What is the word? Why was that particular word used? I'll give you an example. Where have you seen the word before? You know, every once in a while you'll see it and it'll remind you of the movie. Well, so I'm standing in front of a toilet in a public, I think it was a movie house, and I'm standing in front of a urinal, and there's the urinal advertising, right, which, okay, whatever. And I'm reading this thing, and it's about declaring bankruptcy. One of the things it says is it's going to offer you a free credit matrix. Well, you know, what's a more perfect description of the credit? You know, what is your credit score? You follow that? You know, you follow that FICO. The word FICO actually has a specific meaning. It's funny. It means something about idiot. I can't remember. Like, you're so impressed with your own score, that's a good little slave now, isn't it? So I'm looking at that. I'm going, so I start researching, and I wanted to know what the word matrix means, and it has several connotations, but they're all basically the same meaning. For instance, matrix means matrix in Webster's 1828 dictionary. Matrix or matricidal means pertaining to matricide, and matricide is to slay your mother.
Ah.
The killing or murdering of the mother, the killer or murderer of his mother. Well, what happens if you go into an artificial matrix? What happens if you lose yourself? What happens to families, for instance, when people go into the computer virtual world and lose themselves and lose their entire fortunes in a gambling site, right? What happens when you start shifting your mind over to the simulation and start forgetting about reality, kind of like the map being so, you know, that your computer world is beautiful, but your real world is dying, including you in it.
Right.
Right? How many movies have been made? There was a great movie called Surrogates, where people inhabited these robot bodies, but their real bodies were just decaying in a bed somewhere. But everybody was beautiful and robotic, and you could.
Right. It was Bruce Willis, right? Yeah, I remember.
Yes, the overused vessel, Bruce Willis, yes.
from South Jersey, but probably a member of the of the bloodline. I mean, I look at these people now, and every time I see an actor, I see last night was watching, not really watching it. I was just kind of tolerating it. It was called Monument Men, and Clooney was in it, and a bunch of others. And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at Cate Blanchett, and I'm thinking to myself, and then all these like Clint phrases start popping into my head, you know. Clintisms, I guess you could say. And it just makes me think, like, God, you know, she's okay looking, but why is she there? Is she part of this bloodline?
So. This is one of those stories that I really can't say I for fear of being sued. But it was funny, before I moved to L.A., I'll just put it to you this way. Certain actresses and actors, they get there. They literally sleep their way to the top.
Okay.
Right. So I won't mention names.
Oh.
I did. Okay. Several directors that just shattered that concept that these people are there because they have acting skills.
Well, there's other talents that people have other than blood. So you can imagine. Depends on what they have to offer, I guess.
Yeah, well, so okay, so let's follow the trail here, right? Matrix, Matrix again. So this word Matt, of course, and then Pop, P-A-P, means father, M-A-T. So it's a Latin a prefix, basically. So it's a whole word jungle, but matriculation. So now we're at a kind of a different sort of concept. Matriculation is the act of registering a name and admitting to membership. Okay, what is citizenship? Same thing. What is being put into the matrix? What is being put into the virtual world? Well, I mean, you got to have an avatar, right? You got to be registered. You can't have online property, virtual legal property, without the registered name and having some kind of membership and paying to be there, right?
Right.
So you're seeing this sort of, you're seeing this very much a mirror image of, again, I call it a simulacrum because you're seeing real life, then you're seeing legalism and how we all have fallen into legalism, and now you're seeing from legalism we're jumping into virtual reality and doing the same exact thing, to where at this point we're actually, you know, whereas before we could at least be a tenant on the land, now we can't even do that. We can't even touch what we're purchasing, you know. We're
yeah.
It's amazing when you think about it. Matriculate, and that again comes from the word matrix, a role or register to enter and admit to membership in a body or society, particularly in a college, university, by enrolling the name in a register. I can't stress how important the word name actually is. One enrolled in a registered, etc. So, why is this important? Well, you know how they call Mother Earth, Mother Earth?
Right.
Well, I mean, so what happens when we enter into this virtual world and we start forgetting, again, about our source or God, our Mother Earth, right? Well, there's your matrix side. There's your matrix. All right, so let's cover the other versions of the word, which are, again, a similarity. And I'll have to, I want to pull these up just to be accurate. So matrix also in Webster's 1828 means the womb.
Okay.
Okay, so from matrix comes from mater, which is Latin for mother, the womb. When you think about that, again, it's an artificial womb. Right? Isn't that what the matrix is?
Much like Neo's little, you know, his little egg that he was sleeping in inside the matrix.
Well, yeah, it's more than that, though. It's when you think about an artificial womb, this is one of the concepts that was put forward in... you ever heard of Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars?
Indeed, yeah.
Top Secret, an Introductory Program Manual, Programming Manual, Operations Research Technical Manual, TMSW7905.1. I'm going to read this because this is brilliant, and it gives you an idea. You got to stop thinking of the Matrix as a noun, and you got to stop thinking of everything as a verb, as an action. Right, the Matrix is not a place; it's a state of mind. Right, so logistics, the successful application of a strategy requires a careful study of inputs, outputs, the strategy connecting the inputs and outputs, and the available energy sources to fuel the strategy. The study is called logistics. Logistical problem is studied at elementary level first, and then levels of greater complexity are studied as the synthesis of elementary factors. This means that a given system is analyzed. Remember, we're talking about systems when we're talking about the movie and the books, Out of Control. This means that a given system is analyzed, broken down into its subsystems, and those in turn are analyzed until by this process one arrives at the logistical atom, the individual. This is where the process of synthesis properly begins, and at the time of the birth of the individual. All right, so what they're talking about here is developing these artificial wombs, these artificial matrix, if you will, one of those being citizenship, one of those being memberships into different guilds and organizations, you know, all that kind of thing. So the next chapter is the artificial womb. From the time a person leaves its mother's womb, its matrix, its real matrix, its every effort is directed towards building, maintaining, and withdrawing into artificial wombs. In other words, withdrawing into the computer world, the matrix, right? Or whatever it is that satisfies your mind and turns you away from your God or your reality or your nature. Various sorts of substitute protective devices or shells. The objective of these artificial wombs is to provide a stable environment for both stable and unstable activity. To provide shelter for the evolutionary processes of growth and maturity, i.e. survival. To provide security for freedom, and to provide defensive protection for offensive activity. This is equally true of both the general public and the elite. However, there is a definite difference in the way each of these classes go about the solution of problems. And then the next chapter is the political structure of a nation. Dependency, that's the name of the, you know, so it's telling you that this is an artificial matrix, that your political structure of your nation is literally a matrix. The primary reason why the individual citizens of a country create a political structure is a subconscious wish or desire to penetrate their own dependency relationship of childhood. Simply put, they want a human god to eliminate all risk from their life, pat them on the head, kiss their bruises, put a chicken on every dinner table, clothe their bodies, tuck them into bed at night, and tell them that everything will be all right when they wake up in the morning. This public demand is incredible. So the human god, the politician, meets incredibility with incredibility by promising the world and delivering nothing. So who is the bigger liar, the public or the godfather? The public behavior is surrender born of fear, laziness, and expediency. It is the basis of the welfare state as a strategic weapon useful against a disgusting public. Now, I read these things. I used to read these things in shock and horror, and now I read them as more like watching an ant colony. They're truisms. They're statements of reality. It is a disgusting public. Everything in the public is pretty disgusting, if you ask me, which is why, basically all the good laws in the private side. If you're private, then you're not suffering from all those artificial matrices, matricide, and all this stuff that we're talking about.
And these, yeah, these things were, you know, as you've spoken about, were designed over time. I was reading this this morning. I was watching a video that kind of connected to hyperreality, and there was this one guy on there who really was kind of breaking it down. He mentioned surety. He mentioned a lot of the things that you've mentioned in the past, and he kind of put these up on the screen. Very soon, every American will be required to register their biological property in a national system designed to keep track of people, and that will operate under the ancient system of pledging. By such methodology, we can compel people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for our fiat paper currency. Every American will be forced to register or suffer not being able to work and earn a living. They will be our chattel, and we will hold the security interest over them forever by operation of the law merchant under the scheme of secured transactions. And then he goes on, this is at Mandel House, Edward Mandel House. After all, this is the only logical way to fund government, by floating liens and debt to the registrants in the form of benefits and privileges. This will inevitably reap us huge profits beyond our wildest expectations and leave every American a contributor or to this fraud, so we're complicit, which will call social insurance. Without realizing it, every American will insure us for any loss we may incur, and in this manner, every American will unknowingly be our servant. However begrudgingly, the people will become helpless and without any hope for their redemption, and we will employ the high office of the president of our dummy corporation to foment this plot against America. So,
yeah, I'll tell you what, we did a show, if you look up House on my archives, we spent a whole one or two shows. I did it with a guy named Arthur Kovarensky,
mm-hmm.
who in Canada, and we actually went through that quote, that entire quote. We took each word and we examined each word in the legal dictionaries. I think we used an 1889 dictionary from William C. Anderson, and we went over that quote because that's one of those quotes that's disputed, right?
Okay.
And so we're like, well, if it's disputed, let's see if it's true. Let's see if it actually, you know, became the reality. And sure enough, you know, if you break down all those words and don't just read it as you would read any, you know, just sort of read and forget, then all of a sudden the whole thing comes horribly, horribly true. You can see it for what it is, what he's talking about. So we did break that down in an incredible way. Probably if you search for House or Cope, Kovarensky, Arthur Kovarensky, you can find that archive. But yeah, a very true, very, 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 very true statement by that. And these guys, you know, they monologue. They really do. They freaking put their plans right out there.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's you know, people just can't even imagine that that this would even have taken place. This type of deception. This kind of covert action against people, but you know,
look at the description for silent weapons. It says the introduction says this is for social engineering or the automation of society. Well, there again, there's your matrix, the engineering of a social automation system, which we call silent weapons, on a national or worldwide scale, without implying extensive objectives of social control and destruction of human life, i.e. slavery and genocide. So they're telling you that really what this is about is, you know, population control and slavery, but we're not going to put it forward that way. We're going to, you know, we're going to avoid those types of talking points so that we don't get, you know, right. Well, yeah, but that is what it's about, right? Social engineering and automation of society. You're already there, folks. You're already there. You're already paying homage to some corporation. You're already working for someone else. You have nothing. Everything has been stolen. It's time to wake up to that. It's time to, you know, we talked about this before, Charlie. Man, it's time to admit utter and depressing defeat, because only then are you going to come back from it. Otherwise, you're just going to stay. You got to have a mental breakdown. You got to break down. You got to recognize everything as the lie that it is, as the matrix that it is, the artificial womb that you're living in. You're never going to come out of this. It's impossible to come out of it until you see it for what it is.
Right. I think for me, it's been more of like a controlled collapse. I don't think that I've ever gotten to a point where I just, just I broke down and just stayed in bed for like a week or so. I was always working, through these times, and I always managed to kind of keep it in perspective. And, overall, so some people, it would be just like telling them that they've been, that they were adopted and that, we're not your biological parents or something like that. It was more of a controlled kind of, fall. But then again, I never was really involved heavily in the whole process. I mean, when I was in school, I was like, God, when is this going to be over? When am I going to have to stop coming here every day? So I never really got truly indoctrinated into the whole process.
What's important to realize is that in the book, in the simulacrum and simulation, you get the sense that the guy's trying to tell you you're already in the Matrix. He talks about Hollywood movies. Talks about one of my favorite quotes in the book is about nuclear bombs.
Oh, right.
He says nuclear bombs, the only radiation that comes from the nuclear bombs is the control that they have over nations.
Exactly, yeah. And Greg's been pointing that out, too, that he kind of believes that we've been misinformed on that whole thing. Sure, that they can do a lot of damage initially, but after that you see a lot of these places that have been like Chernobyl, and there's wildlife and a lot of other things kind of growing around it.
So we are radiation. That's why we live. So mother, matrix means mother, or the womb. All right?
Right.
So you have to start thinking of these concepts as, again, not as a place specifically, or not as a physical thing, but as a concept, as a state of mind. So the matrix is the womb, the mother, matter, subject matter, which is what we call it in court,
mm-hmm.
anything, materials of which anything is made. Well, what is fiction made of? Paper is the closest thing to a material you can get to, right? But
right.
But you gotta start thinking outside these boxes that we've been put into. The proper sense of the word mother is matrix, so we have mother of pearl, which is the matrix of pearl, right? Okay, let's take some other examples. That which has produced anything, well, government produces persons, right? We're birthed in the country. We're put into nativity, which actually means to be captured. So the Christ nativity scene is actually him being birthed into the nation as a slave. I don't know if you know that or not.
Well, being wrapped up, I mean, there was a woman over the summer at this event that I went to, and she went through the whole process, the birthing process. And when all the things that they do to the child are just so unnatural, like taking the child and wrapping it up in bondage and then handing it over.
Swathing, yeah. That's what's her name, right? Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Brilliant book.
She was very, just a very, like, you could tell that she was just a very, very loving, nurturing woman, and she was up there explaining, like, this has got to stop, this type of, the way that they treat us just from, and we just accept it. We accept that these shots are normal. We accept just everything that comes our way, that people are just dying of, oh, he died. Oh, natural causes. That's sad.
Right. Yeah. Everybody's dying of cancer. Then you have the doctors back in the 1902 saying, oh, I've never seen cancer before. Oh, except in cows that are vaccinated. Yeah. So what else do we call mother? Well, that which has produced anything. So we call the native land. Again, native basically means slave. I found that out. Native land is called our mother country. That which we're enslaved to. It's our mother. It's our authority figure. Right? Okay, what else is a mother? How about the mother church? So what really is the Matrix, right? What are these artificial wombs we hide in? Well, we hide in the church because we don't want to. I think people go to church because they don't want to face the fact that they're all frauds. They're all participating in something called Christianity or Muslimism or whatever, but they're not following anything. Have nothing. They don't want to read. They want to be entertained in church. They don't want to, you know, they want a title, a flattering title. They don't want to actually do anything that makes them. So they hide in these artificial wombs, artificial matrix. You're starting to get the point.
Yeah. But tell me a story like they do, you know, like when I went to church with my father, they would sit up there, they would tell a story. And we're really like little children. Oh, tell me a story. Tell me a story that's really not even true. But it'll make me feel better.
Don't let me face anything real, please. But you're getting the idea that the concept of the Matrix that everybody uses, you know, everybody uses the music and the concepts and the quotes from Morpheus and all these different. They're so proud to use it because they think they know what the hell this movie is about, and they don't. And again, I'm here to squash that this movie is a good thing. It's not a good thing. It's a very bad thing. And until you read the source, until you come to the point where you understand what this thing is talking about, and what is really this concept of the Matrix, which is many different escapes, many different virtual realities that we all subscribe to every day, we're already in. And that was the point that Baudrillard was making in Simulacrum and Simulation. And he does so with such brilliance that it's going to blow your mind, especially when you get to the chapters starting in the end. And if you want, I can read something out of the book that's just...
Sure, sure, absolutely.
We'll do that in a bit. But, man, yeah, just this book totally, totally blew my mind. And it really uncovered the whole fraud that was the movie version, which you could say is a simulacrum. I mean, it's a, I don't know. It's hard to throw those words around and actually have them stick, you know?
Yes.
Okay, so now we have another version of the Matrix, but that's not the only dictionary. Samuel Johnson calls the Matrix the womb, or a place where anything is generated or formed.
Mm-hmm.
So again, here we have our church membership, that's our person. We have our civil person, our citizenship. We have all these different persons and reputations and jobs and titles and numbers. These are all part of the Matrix. These are all things that are formed within the fiction.
Right, yes.
And now we get into the really cool part, what Black's Law, so this will be the court decision, the court's opinion, or what the court considers is the Matrix. What is your mother? If you're a fictional person of the United States, what is your mother? Certainly not the informer on your birth certificate. That's not your mother. Your mother now becomes the state, right?
Right.
So matricide. Citizenship is matricide. Literally, it's when your state becomes the father or the nation. And I can't tell you what a true statement that is in law. Truly, I'm not joking when I say that. Matrix in the civil law is the protocol or first draft of a legal instrument, i.e. birth certificate, from which all copies must be taken. The protocol or first draft of a legal instrument, so your birth certificate, from which all copies must be taken. Why do you think you have to bring your birth certificate into the DMV to get a driver's license for your person? This is not your person. It's your mother is making you. The state is making you. So here's your artificial womb. Here's your artificial this is where you're generated or formed by that original protocol or a first draft, which is, again, that vital statistics, that information that your mother put on, your real mother put on the vital statistics forms, the birth registration form, which comes the birth certificate. Thus, you're birthed into the Matrix. See, I mean, is that making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, a lot of people look at it as a necessary thing. Oh, yeah, I mean, I got my birth certificate and everything, and I got my driver's license, and I got my marriage license, and I got my, you know, I was reading the Bill of Rights the other day. You see how many things I'm able to do because they wrote this, wrote all these things on a piece of paper? I'm so proud. It's sad.
So when we take this, you know, we can verify these things. You know, I don't just take my word for it. We go to different concepts or different aspects of birth and of blood and corruption of blood attainder. So when you look at genealogical records or birth records, you see the word issue. You know, what's the issue of the marriage, right? Because they have to, you know, they can't really say life. It's not life we're talking about, but it's the fictional generation of a character, whether that's a private character or a public character, or, you know, a servant or a master, depends on your accident of birth, basically. So issue is the act of issuing or sending forth, emitting or promulgating. It's the giving of a thing its first inception. All right, so when I look at genealogical charts, I'll see, you know, Bob Smith and Gina Taylor, and the issue or the child of those two is John Smith, right? Or George Bush, right? So I am the issue of my parents, basically. But more importantly, the person, the name, is the issue, not the life itself, the name. And that's where your surety comes in, because the surety bond is basically says, as long as you're operating in that name and that issue, well, then you are bound by the law of persons, basically.
Right. So, you know, I talk to many people that are having issues with their systems. So, I mean, words, obviously, I mean, it's, you know, they can have two meanings. So if you have, you know, I've issued you a document, or I issued you this. I mean, so that's where we get some of this, the how these words have been used in multiple as a noun or as a verb or something like that. That's the word magic in a sense. So if somebody says, yeah, listen, I got this issue with my, or problem, you could say that issue is a synonym for problem, right? But, you know, and then, of course, I've issued you this, you know, this, so it's like I've handed you this, well, or I've given you this. Is that making sense or no?
Put it this way. Okay, let's go further into Black's Law definition here. I mean, to issue something is to put it into circulation. You got to remember that you are money. You are a valuable consideration. Your birth certificate, you know how people always, all the gurus out there, they talk about your bond on your birth certificate and how a corporation owns your,
right.
You know, your birth certificate is on a banknote. I mean, it is a banknote. It's on a paper. My birth certificate says Midwest Banknote Company on it. Okay, so we cannot mistake it for anything else but a financial instrument, right? So to put into circulation as the treasury issues notes, treasury issues, you know, the dollar or whatever it's issuing. So again, you know, what's the issue of your parents? Well, you, and you have a valuable consideration. How do we prove that value? Because what do we trade on the markets? Well, we trade to this certificate of birth. All right. So again, the final definition is to send out, or to send out officially. So we're sent out from our mother, you know, issued. Or another word for that is to deliver.
Right.
For use. Or authoritatively, to go forth as an as authoritative or binding. Now remember, the word straw man or strominius homo in Latin means the bond of surety, or to be in bond or surety. So, you know, there's another word, deliver. Well, why do you go to the delivery room? Well, that's two words, actually. Delivery. Your livery is being taken away when you're delivered. So, again, so this goes back to Matrix, the protocol or first draft of a legal instrument, which is your birth certificate, from which all copies must be all copies must be taken. So you start to see the true nature of what this quote unquote Matrix is, and you have to stop thinking of it as an actual place, just like people go on a video game system and get so immersed in the artificial world that's created, the virtual reality, that they lose touch with reality. Well, if we're hit from birth with this, you know, if we're issued from birth into these different artificial wombs, these different artificial mothers that we're sucking on the teat of, and then we're going to be lost. We're always going to be lost because we're always searching for something artificial to replace the real. And that's his whole point in the book. Now you take The Matrix, the movie. Well, it's cool to go into The Matrix. You can do anything. You can break all the laws. You can become the one because all this wonderful, wonderful things you can do in The Matrix. You can, you know, unlimited weapons. You can, you know, create anything. You can download any information into your brain.
You can have a steak dinner with a lady in the red dress.
Exactly, i.e. transhumanism, right? What's the movie really promoting but transhumanism? Downloading your consciousness into a computer.
Yeah.
Okay, I got a real problem with that.
Yeah. You got to keep your consciousness in there.
That's what Patrick Jordan, when I first met him, he was like always talking about hell and how hell is consciousness in the artificial structure. So when they attach, for instance, brain cells to a computer chip and then put that computer chip into a robot, and then the robot knows suddenly that if it runs into something, it needs to turn left or right to avoid that thing, that's hell. That is life in a structure that is no longer life, but it's pure hell. There's been several movies and several cartoons made about this, where I can remember one where the lady comes back and visits her clone, her origin, like the first, the girl that her clone was, she's like the 25th clone.
Okay.
And she comes back and she visits her actual, you know, source, her actual Matrix. and he sort of takes you through a walk through history of cloning and all this shit that's happening. And it's very, very, very disturbing because it literally describes Patrick Jordan. He's over at vaccinefraud.com. It describes his hell because you're putting our consciousness into a computer and then leaving it there for eternity. That's hell. That's hell. There was another show that was an English show that in order to rehab prisoners, people who committed crimes, they would download their consciousness into a box, basically. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't cooperating, they'd leave you in this white room with nothing in it for like a month, and then they'll come back, or what it seems like a month in your artificial, you know, structure, as punishment. By that month, you're dying because there's nothing there. You're not hungry. You're not eating. There's no social interaction. You're just sitting there in this construct, right?
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much being tortured by an absence of all reality. That is hell. That is, unfortunately, what these guys, I think, are sort of. I think they're making all these. I think they're making a lot of these movies and a lot of these sort of tales of the horrors of all this stuff because that's their plan. I think they're getting us used to it.
Yeah, I just can't even watch any of these movies anymore. I, you know, like a lot of the understandably, justifiably, I can't watch any more of the slasher movies. I used to see a lot of them. I used to go to the, you know, Halloween as a kid. And now it's like I look at something and say, I instantly just know that it's shit. there's just no point in doing that. Whereas other people in their 20s and in their 30s, they're still all about, you know, something in there interests them enough where they're going to go pay $15 to see it. Like this, the heck was it, the Cloverfield thing that just came out, where the guy captures the girl, brings her in there to save her life or something like that, and it turns out to be aliens or whatever. So they really do like that whole alien thing. They love that, and I wonder what that...
We kind of have a theory, myself and Patrick, that they've basically presented us with all of the choices that we have on how we're going to be killed. It's either going to be a fake alien attack, it's going to be a flu virus, it's going to be a zombie apocalypse, it's going to be all these different things that, you know, in technicality could be staged, or could be, you know, a virus could be spread. If a virus is such a weird word, but I don't like to use it, but you get the point.
And
that, you know, there's nuclear, there's all these different things that could be faked, right?
Right.
And it's almost like they're putting it out there as entertainment so that we choose, you know, according to the ratings, which way we're gonna die.
Right. That's, so we get to right.
Yeah, we get to choose. So hey, if I'm gonna die, well, I'm a fan of the zombie movies, so at least I want to go out blowing each other away. You know, we're gonna kill you.
It's gonna mess people down.
That's the way you want to go. Great. We'll just send a signal out through your new chips in your bank cards. It'll vibrate at a certain frequency, turn you crazy, and you'll just start killing each other, thinking each other are zombies. Whatever.
Yeah, I just got one of those the other day with a chip in it.
You should see a movie. The movie is it was out last year, and it was called The Kingsman.
Oh, The Kingsman, right?
See that?
I did not see it, but I've heard people talk about it.
Well, there's
where Samuel L. Jackson does something. He's to her, that's what I kind of heard, that he was involved in it. He was a bad guy.
Yeah, well, he comes out with free internet for everybody. He passes out a chip that looks strangely enough in perfect size and everything else, like the chip that's in your little debit card or credit card or whatever. And when the chip's activated, it turns everybody into absolute raving madmen, and everybody kills each other until one man is standing.
Wow.
That's his plan of depopulation.
Yeah. So, well, you know what? I'm going to check it out now as I probably wouldn't have before, but I will take a look at that.
It's tough sometimes to watch some of these movies, but whenever I'm watching anything, I'm doing it because I'm paying attention to what they're putting forward.
Oh, sure, yeah, you're like propaganda detector, yeah. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to see. I mean, it's fun to witness. You know, we don't know what's in the background there. That could be manipulating us as well. I mean, I'm sure that was some of their. Some of the, you would imagine, the basic forms of their, you know, the raster scan going back and forth. They mentioned that at the frequency that it was refreshing the screen was a way to put those watching in a trance. So we don't know what's happening to us. We don't know. that's the mystery, the nightmare, and then of course. You know, we're involved in something, and we're part of something, unfortunately, that is, could, to some, one of the greatest things ever, and to, you know, to, again, that some, one of the worst things that could ever happen, because, you know, it's affected us on so many levels. And then again, we have to ask ourselves, why are we the exception? Why have we accepted and been able to decrypt this? Does Patrick have any theories on that? Like how we've been able to decipher the Matrix where others are just...
Well, yeah, I mean, both myself and Patrick are in very much in concurrence. Obviously, his website is vaccinefraud.com. He's done 14 or so books on the subject, which are incredible research documents. Not the best written works, but the research in them is priceless. Just collections and collections of research. But he, you know, we talked about you talked about David Icke in the beginning,
right? Yeah, one of his quotes there. Yeah.
Well, okay, so I've seen David Icke a couple times. He's fantastic. I got to give the guy credit. In fact, I actually want to do what he does. I would love to stand up there for 8 to 10 hours.
You would be awesome at it. I went to see him in New York City in 2010, I think it was. I can see you doing that for sure, man. see you doing it. That's what you need to do. Hopefully we get you there.
I want to get back into music because that's the only thing that actually ever gets me spiritually, you know. The only thing that does anything for me. I'd like to do a sort of a combination of that and speech. But if you take David Icke's concepts, and maybe consider that when he talks about reptilians and that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and it ruins the rest of his speech, you know?
Yeah.
Could you possibly then be re-interested if, in fact, we were talking about brain parasites, which we kind of hit on a little bit? What if these aliens were actually an RNA-based life form that was on Earth and floating around space, and the Gnostics called them demented mind parasites? And what if actually what we're really talking about is actually a perfectly natural infection that happens all throughout nature, a parasitic infection that actually drives people to do certain things, drives the nerds to become scientists and build CERN, for instance, or drives people to want to control chaos through weather modification control, geoengineering.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What if we replaced David Icke's alien, you know, concept, maybe took it too literally, maybe we're talking about something that's unknown or unseen because it's microscopic. So if you want to know what Patrick's whole deal is about, and mine as well, then we are both convinced through years and years of hardcore, massive research tomes that the human race is actually infected with mind parasites. That is literally, after a while, there's very few conclusions you can come to for why people are so controlled and stupid in many cases, and smart in other cases. How, for instance, technology was able to be almost instantaneously put into this sort of advanced state all of a sudden overnight. Oh, well, it was the Roswell crash. Well, maybe not. Maybe it was an ancient knowledge. Maybe when we're talking about things like Atlantis and we're talking about these civilizations that seem so advanced, we're talking about, I mean, if you actually understand what I'm saying, which is kind of hard, RNA is what builds DNA. RNA and DNA are sort of competing life forms. So you have these extremophiles, these different forms of life on Earth that literally infect and reprogram, like almost like a computer, the minds of all these insects and bugs and animals and humans.
Mm-hmm.
It's a known fact that this is happening. That's why otherwise I wouldn't be promoting it as a possible.
Right. Yeah. You've used many examples that show cats carry the.
We're familiar with toxoplasmosis.
Toxoplasmosis, and my brother's family they have a number of cats, and I just sit there and I just watch them just fawn over these animals, and I don't hate them, but I just sit there and wonder, and I said, what's up with all this frickin' cat worship over here?
All the way back from those beautiful, wonderful Egyptian times of, you know, right, so yeah. What's going on? Why the cat worship? Why the cat worship in the hieroglyphics? You know, the CDC warns that toxoplasmosis is like in 40% of the population in the world.
Yeah.
Not as much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you take that, knowing that when everybody gets into a high-speed motorcycle accident, it's toxoplasmosis, giving a sexual reward to the brain, a pleasure reward to the system, to the brain, for acting in this behavior that... creates adrenaline and then feeds the parasite, right? How do you overlook that when people are acting so stupid out there? When some people aren't able to think for themselves, they have cognitive dissonance. What causes cognitive dissonance? What is that chemical reaction that happens when you're talking? We all experience it, Shelley. What happens when you're talking to somebody and they just shut it off? They shut off. Literally, they have a chemical response in their brain. You can no longer talk to that person about anything.
Mm-hmm. It happened yesterday, as a matter of fact. It was very interesting.
Why is that happening? Can that possibly just be a fight or flight response as natural to the human, or is something else causing that? Now, this might, for some people, this might say, oh, well, you know, that's very similar to David Icke. You're going to ruin your reputation or ruin your credibility by talking about brain parasites, which is essentially talking about, if you will, an alien invasion.
That could be attacking and stimulating the reptilian brain, which we know is a thing, right? The reptilian brain is I don't think that, you know, on a graph it would say this is your reptilian brain, but it's something that we've heard before, even I think before David Icke.
I think, and that's what I think is happening. It's just like the Matrix. You know, people take the Matrix seriously, so seriously that people now think the universe is a hologram. Right? It's all this satanic freaking thought against reality, against nature that's self-evident. Well, similarly, people take the notion of an alien race literally. When you look at all the texts and all the things, they talk about parasites. They talk about something unseen. Oh, well, the aliens hide themselves. No, what we're talking about when we say something unseen or something, the Gaia spore, or the spore of the Earth or the spore of space that creates life or alters life and advances civilizations. These are the Gnostic writings. I I'm not just making this up. How many movies, you'd be surprised how many movies out there are actually, you know, from Invasion of the Body Snatchers to all the different versions of this type of parasitic infection. And I just want people to start considering it. I mean, I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of research papers. Patrick's put them into books. So we're not talking about anything crazy or anything that's not something that you can go look up right now for yourself. As opposed to aliens at the Galactic Federation that's going to come save us, you know, all this crap out there about that. You know, which one actually kind of makes a little bit of sense?
I would say the parasite.
Right. And you know, if you don't dig that and you don't want to look at the proof, that's fine. Let's go back to how we're controlled through the brain, through these artificial matrices. Let's go back to the Bible. What does the Bible say in Deuteronomy 4:16? I mean, it's like reading this, you're like, holy shit, why is nobody looking at this? Lest ye corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image, like the projected self-image, the similitude of any figure, the likeness of male or female. Lest ye corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image, the similitude of any figure. Here's the Bible talking about the frickin' Matrix.
Well, that just totally blows me away, dude. I hear that and I'm trying to understand what it means. But, see, and I think that's where it comes in. People just don't know how to decipher anything. I mean, they just don't know how to... They just rather have someone say, hey, listen, this is, you know, this is the word of the of God. And they're like, okay, I'll take your word for it, bro. Here's a buck.
See,
a new pair of socks.
Because when you say God, people think, you know, like the Matrix, you're thinking about an entity, something, some man, something that's sitting up there. But again, until you understand the definition of God as used in the Bible, which is Jehovah, which is a verb meaning all that is in existence, all of nature, basically, everything that's happening right now that is real, not artificial, man included, that's God, right? So everything, oneness, the wholeness of reality is God. So it's like everything that is truth, faith, that is God. So if you understand that, then all of a sudden all this Bible stuff starts making sense. And all it's telling you is avoid the Matrix, of artificial names, titles. Avoid, what did it say here? It said, avoid the similitude of yourself. Don't act in the person of another, which is what we do in citizenship. I can't stress enough.
Right.
And then you look at the Bible, these quotes from these really great, you know, powerful men, and they know. Horace Greeley, he said, a Bible reading people cannot be enslaved. Now, you can't take a quote like that from an elitist who owns the New York Times or whatever. You can't take a quote like that and just dismiss it outright. If this guy says a Bible-reading people cannot be enslaved, you better damn well give a little bit of respect right. to that.
Yeah, but then isn't that, I mean, understanding it. I mean, there's been people out there that, there are people out there that I've spoken to that have said that they've read the Bible, and then when I start to speak to them about some of the things that are going on, some of the blatant things that are becoming more blatant, but going on, and they go into a, they don't go into a cognitive dissonance. They go into a almost as if, yes, I understand what you're saying, and this was predicted, and I'm ready. And maybe they are spiritually ready for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that there's a large group of what you would probably call New Age Christianity, if you will, that claims to have this special relationship with Christ or with God, and, you know, to pray and all that stuff. And I think that's total bullshit. I'm sorry. That's not what the Bible is about.
Well, I think that they've deciphered it to a certain point where they know that evil is coming or that it's already here. But they still, even though they know that, they, on some level, they still don't understand, you know, the definitions of many things and understand God and Jehovah and the things that, you know, that you've come to understand through your journey.
Well, also,
they know that evil's there, and it's...
Sure, I'll give you an example of how that's been seemingly.
We are UCYTV, March 20th, Cole Reality Radio, and the Shaolin Lama, and my co-host today, Clint Richardson of the Corporation Nation. And we're talking about simulation, simulacrum, and or simulacra, the simulation of artificial realities layered on top of reality. So I guess that the more artificiality and that we layer on top of reality and nature is going to be very, very hard to find, or natural is going to be very, very hard to find.
So There's a couple places in the Bible people have been convinced, because Jehovah is the name, the Jewish name of God, basically, that it automatically then must be dismissed which would mean that the whole Bible would, of course, need to be dismissed, which is apparently ridiculous. People, again, Jew is a word that's very misunderstood, I think. And they'll say that that Jehovah is Baal and Baal is Jehovah. You familiar with Baal worship?
No.
B-A-A-L.
Oh, Baal. Okay. B-A-A-L. I've heard of it, but not.
It was the male god of the Phoenicians or the Canaanites, right? So, just people equate the two together because Baal, the word Baal, actually means Lord, and when Lord is used in the Bible, Lord can, again, like God, can refer to landlords, kings, or Jehovah, or whatever, Elohim, the gods, the magistrate. So it's one of those loose words. And so there's been this sort of movement to equate basically God with the devil, to reverse what the Bible is saying and saying, oh, no, Christ was actually Lucifer. They both mean light.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, you know, if I say personal, I can mean in a false person, or I can mean in the first person. So you have the third person or the first person. If I say I'm acting personally while acting as Clint Richardson, well, it's not really me that's acting. It's that false name, right? So likewise, you have the notion that the word Baal means Lord, Jehovah means the supreme God of that is all things, not of, but that is all things. Again, a verb. So you have a title versus sort of the reality of all things. And so, you know, in the Bible it says that God is against, or Jehovah is against Baal. So it disproves that theory altogether.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sustained, you know, this sort of Satanistic. And, you know, take the mystery out of these words. Take the mystery out of Satan. All you're left with is adversary.
Right, exactly, yeah. Adversary.
Okay, that can be anything and anyone, right? Especially the artifice, anything artificial, right? So there's a great deal of frustration in my head because this stuff is so brilliant. Just like this book, Simulacrum and Simulation, the Bible is so brilliant in what it's saying, and yet so difficult to actually get there and decipher. If you ever do get a chance to read Simulacrum and Simulation, you're going to get stuck on the first page, on that first quote that we read from Ecclesiastes, you know, that the Simulacrum is truth. Well, Simulacrum is a copy without an original. Wait a minute, how does this work?
I get stuck on green eggs and ham, man. I'm like, why would you eat green eggs? I wouldn't eat green eggs. Ah, bad joke, but it's very hard for me to. Sometimes when I start reading certain topics, I can really flow through it, and I guess it's just really kind of my impatience. That's why I find it. You know, when I obviously listen to your show, and soon to read your life's work, it seems is on its way, or the sum, hopefully it's not the total sum, but the sum of your work is coming this way to me very soon and many other people. You just reading this information, being able to decipher it. I mean, have you always been a very good reader and able to absorb and comprehend and
no, I was just always different, like everyone else out there who gravitates towards this stuff. I mean, I gravitated towards Alex Jones because it was the only thing I could find.
Mm-hmm. Same.
I was always different. I was called bullshit on public school. I called bullshit on history. I called bullshit on most of the stuff they were trying to feed me. Just like everyone else out there. The only difference is, I'm telling you, Charlie, the only difference between me and anybody else out there listening is that I quit. I said, screw this. I'm not going to participate in this big lie. I want to know what the lie is. I know it's a lie. Everybody knows it's a lie. Everybody knows they're participating in a lie, but they don't know what the lie is. It's like everybody knows that the Matrix exists, but they don't know what it is. They have a movie to go by, and the movie's very misleading. It takes them in the opposite direction, takes them into a satanic type of notion. But the reality of that quote, that notion of the Matrix, very different than, and it's all in your mind. It's all you. It's not anything external. It's not, it's always you. And that's kind of what happened to me. I became a monk, man. I quit my job. I've been poor ever since. Just like any, you know, if you read about the monks in the monasteries, they'd write these beautiful books, right? These beautiful tomes of, and spend years handwriting out Bibles and stuff like that. If anything, that's all I did, is I detracted myself from society, and I said, I'm not going to participate in this shit anymore. I quit my Hollywood job. I wrote about that. I said, I'm not going to support this propagandist crap anymore, and I withdrew. And it's the best thing I ever did, maybe the worst thing I ever did, but at least I was able to finally, after 10 years or so, figure out the lie, figure out what it was, why, what, and that's all. That's the only difference between me and anybody else, is that I actually plucked myself, voluntarily took myself out of that societal thing. I didn't say, well, I have to keep working because I have bills to pay. I said, fuck the bills. They're not real. The money's not real. I'm not going to base my life and my knowledge time on something artificial.
Did you have a lot of debt when you decided to do that? I mean, now obviously that wasn't the main reason, but that's kind of cool to get to just say, hey, and I've done that. I'm probably doing that right now to a certain extent.
I had debt, very little debt. I still have a college, like a $5,000 college loan that I haven't even touched. And I won't touch until I actually, you know, for some miracle, $5,000 comes to my door and it's accompanied with a lot more than that, then maybe I'll pay off the debt. But now I know, you know, I interviewed enough people now, and I understand the system enough to know that the debt doesn't exist, first of all, and that it's paid. The first collection notice I get, it's already paid off, and the collection agency has no right to it. It's a third party company that has no right to the claim. So, I mean, I can go to court easily and get them off my back if they ever mess with me now. Another part of the journey, another part of the beautiful mm-hmm. the beautiful understanding of things. So I whatever debt I had, I went through identity theft. I was a great, you know, I was on top of things, man. I was in Hollywood making a 100 grand a year or so, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden I just went into identity theft. That was one of the things that caused me to kind of break down and be like, holy crap, because I had cars and homes and credit cards and all this crap being sold in my quote unquote name.
Wow.
That was sort of my first notion that, hey, my name is not my own. You know, my identity, if it can be stolen, is obviously not my own.
Yep. So. Yep. These banks, they're making I don't know how they make money on a lot of this, but I mean, at least twice now, it's happened. Not what you said, you know, not what you said happened to you, but I mean, I've had them shut the card down because somebody in Texas was, you know, buying things with my number, and California, somebody was buying things, and thankfully it was what they've done. I don't know when they started, but people can go into a grocery store or something, and they can purchase up to about $30 or $40, maybe $50 worth of merchandise, and they don't even have to sign or anything like that, and they can just swipe it. So what they do is they go in there one time and they get it, and then the next day they'll go in there and they'll get another, you know, amount. And then so I went into the bank the last time, I think it happened at the end of last year, sometime in November, and I said, you know, I'm a member of some of these wholesale clubs, and when you go in there, you get a card, they take a picture of you. I said, why can't you here take a picture of me, and then when I go anywhere and use this card, I can show them that it's me, and then swipe it, and so that would just totally eliminate these things from happening. And then I said, you know what, and you don't even have to answer that question. I said, because I know why, because they want the fraud to happen. I know that they're getting something from it, but I don't exactly know how the whole process works. But
I tried to get the police involved. They wouldn't help. Credit agencies wouldn't do anything to correct the mistakes. They knew they were mistakes, but that's not what they're there for. They're there to harm your credit more than to do anything.
Because so they can charge you more. And,
right. Yeah. Of course, they're agents of the banks. So I figured out after a while that it was an inside job. Because I went through 9 different debit cards where I would activate the card, the Bank of America card. Bank of America is notorious for it. And I'd activate the card. Before I could even use the card, the money would be taken again. And they'd refund the money, and I'd activate the card, the new card that I waited for another 5 days, and it would be taken before I could use the card. And that happened like 9 times. And I'm like, this cannot be anything but an inside job. It would be impossible for that to be a coincidence, first of all, or right. Someone like, yeah, it was, you know, and the way the police acted and the district attorney acted, it was like, yeah, we're not going to prosecute you, you know, the guy that stole your identity. We're going to go after the big gang that is responsible, you know, not just the little fish, we want the big fish. And, right. You know, it was almost routine. You're right. It's very much I'll tell you what. Just so people understand something, you know, some people have asked me why I don't speak so much anymore about the CAFRs, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, the financial statements of government showing all its money and where all its you know, its profit, debt, portfolio, and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I came to understand something very important. And if you watch the big guys out there, especially your Buffetts and the guy, and you look at what they invest, what government actually invests in, you find that they invest in debt.
Right.
Almost all of their assets are debt. Sure, government is the main holder of all the corporations. That's easy to see. Just pull up any of the pension funds, and you'll see massive stock ownership, which is why government, through corporate governments, controls these corporations through proxy shareholder voting. So when government is a shareholder of every corporation in the world, well, then there's... And they're voting for who's the CEO and who the board of directors are. You know, you see a little conflict of interest there. You see empire. You see communism.
Yeah. Fascism, yeah.
What I figured out is I was listening to this guy. Someone sent me a clip, and he's talking in a finance class at some you know, mediocre college, and he's a billionaire many times over. And the teacher keeps asking him, what do you recommend people here invest in? This was only, you know, it was a very short time ago. You know, looking at the stock market, what would you recommend if you had $100,000 or $1,000, what would you invest in? And he proceeds to tell her, I don't, you know, you don't invest in the market. Only fools invest in the market. Because, your agent is going to win whether you win or lose. So he's like, I don't invest in positive things. I invest in negative things. I invest in debt. For instance, and he goes into this spiel, he says, I just borrowed $500 million. I'm going to turn that $500 million into a real asset, and I'll pay the debt for a while, and then when the economy crashes, the debt is going to go away. He said, so I'm actually getting a loan of $500,000. I'm taking the debt and will pay the interest for knowing that the economy is going to crash and the loan is not going to be due. So I started looking at all the government investments, all the debt that the government has invested in. You wonder why government has so money, because so much money, because it's all invested in loans, corporate bonds, and these sort of things, which are low interest loans to corporations. So most of the money that the government has on its books in these CAFRs, which you don't see on the budget report, they don't really promote it as anything, is all in debt.
Right.
It's future loan payments or future whatever, the bonds that are going to come due in the future, but they're absolutely 100% no guarantee of payment.
Right. Yeah.
So what should people be investing in? Well, I mean, I would never tell people to go out and max out the credit cards, get the cash, and turn it into something that you can actually use, but that appears to be the most reasonable thing to do, because remember, there is no money. Now, let's take another example from the Matrix movie. Okay, so what we're talking about here is language. No matter how you look at it, whether it's computer code, which you're familiar with, whether it's geometry, whatever it is, you're only talking about a language. Language is only ever a simulation of the real. And what's interesting is the word sacred. You know, you attach the word sacred to geometry.
Right.
What happens if you make a representation of the real into something sacred? When you're respecting the math over the actual substance, the form over the substance, well, the word sacred actually takes on its opposite meaning, which is cursed.
Hmm.
So anything that man makes sacred that is not of nature, or i.e. not of God, is cursed. So all the churches, all the altars, all that crap that we, you know, all the symbols, all the simulations, and again, this is what the book talks about, is all cursed, basically. So, because it's sacred. So sacred geometry and all the gods of the elite, basically, are all sacred.
So when you hear someone say, oh, it's that sacred, it's artificial.
If it's form instead of substance, then yeah, it's a curse. It's a worship of the artifice, or the form of something, without any of the substance. It's an amazing understanding again. But remember. The famous part of the movie The Matrix, where there is no spoon, right?
Right.
They're doing spoon bending. The whole time, of course, they're in a computer simulation. So they're already in a simulation where nothing is real. Okay? And here it is trying to bend a spoon that doesn't exist already because it's a simulation. So really what they're trying to tell you in this scene is that there is no spoon. What they mean is you have to detach the name, the noun, that has been put upon this hunk of metal or this digital code that looks like a hunk of metal in your virtual reality. You have to separate the fiction from the reality. You have to separate the spoon, which is the form without the substance. The name, in other words, just like I have to separate myself from this artificial matrix called Clint Richardson, this artificial womb that I carry myself in for all these protections and securities and all that, I have to separate myself, and I have to realize there is no Clint Richardson. There's only me, I am that I am, quote unquote. Right? So likewise, why can he bend the thing that is called the spoon? Because he realizes there is no spoon. It's a fiction. Right? So the law only applies, this is the important part, the law only applies to the name. The law only applies to the fiction. The law only applies to Clint Richardson. So I can't do anything in Clint Richardson. I can't break the laws. But if I recognize that there is no Clint Richardson, if I recognize there is no spoon, then I can do it. If the law says I can't bend the spoon, like the laws of the Matrix say, well, okay, then my person, my projected self-image, a straw man cannot bend the spoon because it's against the law of man. But what happens when the law of nature comes into play? And I realize that that spoon, just as a metaphor, that that spoon is actually not a spoon, because a spoon is just a name that someone applied to it that I agreed to and I consent to, and therefore I consent to all the law that's attached to the name, the noun, right? But the spoon itself is an entity of nature. It's something that is moldable and can easily be bent, right?
Right.
So this is part of that programming, part of that sort of matrix, if you will, is that we respect everything. We hold sacred the name of everything over the substance. And because we respect the name, the word magic that is used, we are bound in all of our efforts to do anything. We cannot accomplish anything. We cannot be free as long as we're participating in the name. When we're so convinced that we are this artificial person, this straw man that's been created for us, well, then we're never going to be able to accomplish anything except what they, the controllers of the name, the god of the name, if you will, wants us to do, wants us to create, wants us to. We're just going to continue to be slaves to a system that named everything, that created the language, the artful names and titles and all that stuff. And I don't know if that's clear, but it's how things work.
Well, I think, and because we know of the nefarious nature of it, and you obviously, more than most, and me understanding as my journey progresses, a lot of people will look at it and say, well, what's wrong with naming things? What's wrong with, they can't make the, they don't understand the nefarious things that give them the ability to do the things that they do to us as a result of the fictional straw man. So they just look at it and said, well, you follow what I'm saying? Like they would look at it in a sense like you have to name everything. What's wrong with giving something a name? So I think that they would look at it that way. I mean, I understand the nefarious nature of it. So that's where I kind of draw the line and say, you're doing bad things to us.
Let me share a couple quotes. Okay, these are both, I think, from Philip K. Dick. There exists for everyone a sentence, a series of words, that has the power to destroy you. Another sentence exists, another series of words, that could heal you. If you're lucky, you will get the second, but you can be certain of getting the first. You can be certain, my friends, all of us, every single one of us, of getting a series of words. What's a series of words but a name? That will destroy you. It's just going to destroy you and make you spiritually dead. That's what civil life. You have two forms of life. You have a spiritual life, and you have a civil life, an artificial life. That's what we are living in. Okay? Everyone will have a sentence that will destroy them. Very few of us, as the Bible says, will find the path and walk it and actually have a series of words that could actually heal you. More importantly, Philip K. Dick, this prolific author of so much science fiction, so much wisdom as well, he says the basic tool for the manipulation of reality is the manipulation of words. If you can control the meaning of words, you can control the people who must use them. That's the perfect quote to give to these people who don't understand the power of a name. The basic tool for the manipulation of reality is the manipulation of words. What's a word? A name. A name is a word. A word is a name. If you can control the meaning of words, you can control the people who must use them. Now, what is a name? A name is a noun. Noun and name are the same meaning, the same word. What is a noun? A person, a place, or a thing? Well, that covers everything in nature, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. If I put a name upon everything in nature, then I'm manipulating reality, and I'm describing it, defining it, redefining it in my own terms. I've created a language structure, and I'm controlling the meaning of those words. I've put a certain valuation upon them, and I've made certain things legal and illegal, and therefore I control the people who use my language. See, what people don't realize is that words like ethnic, ethnocentric, the kind of word, that all, and why you are a citizen or part of a nation is because you speak the language of that nation. You're indoctrinated into the language of that particular country, culture, or whatever. That's what makes you ethnically an American, or ethnically a Scot, or ethnically an Irishman, because you speak the language, the dialectic, and the accent, and the specific meanings of the words. Which, you know, if you ever try to speak to someone in Ireland that has that Gaelic sort of, you know, almost impossible to understand English accent, they have a very, very different culture, very, very different meaning in their words. And again, that's changing our
MK scope on ya. If the MK hits you, it's guaranteed to open ya. The 57. 20 rounds a minute, try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job comes.